Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at ethostrainingshy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you. Happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. I'm so excited to have my good friend here today, Stephanie Garrity. She is the executive director at Rainbows for All Children, which is located in Evanston. I love being able, as you know, having this podcast, being able to use it as a resource to share all the different places that people can go to for any type of healing or health and wellness, you know, especially when we talk about children. And Rainbows is an international non-for-profit organization that assists children and their families who are grieving death, divorce, or other life-altering crisis. So it's really important for me to help be able to spread the knowledge and education and the resources to you guys and everyone, and you guys spread it, as, you know, one of the main missions that I have through the podcast. So I thought it would be wonderful to have Stephanie here today and to talk a little bit about her background and kind of how she stepped into this role, but also to share all of the services and offerings that Rainbows has and everything they've kind of done and helped so many kids through so many situations. So thank you, Stephanie, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. This is great. We always have wonderful conversations together. And Stephanie also being a client of mine, but I just, you know, I feel like there's no better person to be in a role like this than you, because you are just so calming and you just speak so well. And I feel like you are definitely just a great support for so many people in your life. And I know you've been through a lot of grief in your life as well, which I think helps people relate to you really well. And you're just such a solid support system for so many. So
thank you.
I just had to share that. I think you're amazing. So
thanks, Jen. I think you're amazing too.
Oh, well, thank you. So tell us what is Rainbows?
So Rainbows is, you pretty much hit it on the head. It's an international nonprofit that supports children who are grieving a loss of a family member due to death, divorce, deployment, deportation, incarceration, or life-changing illness. People are like, well, why do kids need that? You know, it used to be the tried and true phrase that just always put my teeth on edge was like, oh, kids are resilient. They'll get through it. They'll be fine. We don't want to bog them down in the details. We're just going to let them continue to be kids. Mm-hmm. And that's what they automatically know to do anyway. You know, right. Kids are inherently joyful in every circumstance. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids created games in Auschwitz during the Holocaust. I mean, kids want to be joyful. But the reality is that just in the U.S. alone, there are 51 million children who are grieving one of those losses. So that equates to 1 in 7 kids.
That's a lot.
And then you look at that number and statistics show us that 10% of those kids are 5.1 million of those children. And when I say children, youth, kids, it's all pretty interchangeable. It's everybody under 18.
Right.
But 5.1 million of those kids are grieving a lost family member due to 3 or more of those losses. So
A
pretty staggering number. And
yeah.
Then, you know, you start to look at what happens when kids don't have support. You know, they run much higher risks for all kinds of adversities. I'm trying to think, like, eating disorders, gang involvement, drug and alcohol addiction, just all kinds of things that we, you know, as parents,
people
you don't want
can
your kids
turn to,
yeah,
when they don't have that support. Yep.
Absolutely. Self-medicating, and kids do it just as easily as adults do it.
Exactly.
So So rainbows exist so we can pull those kids together and they can share their experiences. We do what are called mixed loss groups. Typically, some of our groups are devoted to single loss, but mm-hmm. we do mixed loss groups. We talk not necessarily about the loss itself. That does come up in group, but it's more about the feelings that they have as a result of that loss. We try really hard not to say the loss of a loved one, because sometimes we lose people who aren't necessarily so loved in our life. You know, we have these kind of push-pull relationships.
Right. That's a very good point. And the way you word that, that's...
So we try to talk about their person and how, mm-hmm. you know, and how they feel about the loss of their person. And so it's very interesting to me that children who have lost someone to death and kids who have, you know, they can't be with their parent because their parent's incarcerated. The feelings are the same. There's anger, there's, you know, abandonment, and the parent or the person who died in the child's life didn't voluntarily abandon that child. They died.
Right.
But those children have the same issues, same concerns, same frustrations.
Same emotions.
Absolutely. And when they start to realize that, they actually become really great advocates for each other.
Mm-hmm.
One of our littles who's in a group in the northern suburbs said she had a play date with one of her group mates for the mm-hmm. first time, and she lost her dad. He died. Mm. And this other child's parents were divorced. And so they're playing, and mom just happened to overhear. And one, you know, the other little girl says to this little girl, she said, you know, I just know that I hope you know that I'm here for you. She's like, I feel terrible because I get to see my dad, but you'll never see your dad again. And
oh,
this incredible
God.
Empathy that comes out of these groups that these kids give to each other is just off the charts. I mean, it makes me get goosebumps.
Oh my God.
Every
that's
time.
Like, I'm like teary hearing yeah. that. But that's so incredible to hear a story like that, and how important it is to create these little support systems for kids. Like I said, like as adults, we need that. I mean, you know, kids or adults, like we go through a lot of the same things. And I think we do just expect the kids are going to kind of get through things
right.
and are resilient, which yes, they can be. They can get through. They're very strong and they can get through situations. But having those tools and resources.
Exactly.
Can definitely, I think, create a more positive outcome and experience for their lives.
Sure. And by equipping them with tools at the earliest opportunity, mm-hmm. Just sets them up for success going forward, because you and I both know that this is not the only adverse situation they're going to find themselves in. Life is full of it. And
absolutely.
The sooner we give them the tools and they start to learn to use them and cope and develop their own strategies, the better mm-hmm. off they're going to be.
Oh, for sure. And that sets them up as like being resourceful as they grow up too. It's like, well, I had, tools and support for this. I'm sure there's something for whatever the next, situation can be.
Yep.
But I think, that's a great example to kind of set them up with in life.
Yep, for sure.
So you guys started in, Rainbows was founded in 1983?
Yeah. So our founder was Susie Gail Marta. She went through a divorce in the late 70s. She mm-hmm. had three boys and found that she needed support. So she went out and she started getting support.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her kids said, you know, Mom, you come back and you seem lighter and you seem happier, and I want a place to go and, so to speak, dump my bucket.
Yeah.
So Susie started to look around and there was nothing. So, in the late 70s, she's like, okay, I'm going to create it then. So what she ended up doing was literally she started having these like weekend camps at her house around her dining room table.
Oh my gosh,
table.
I love it. Uh-huh.
Like, let's talk about this. How are you feeling about this? And that morphed into the program that we have today, which she developed with social workers, psychologists, teachers, and then piloted it in three Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Oh, wow.
And they took off mm-hmm. and, the need became so great that it just, all of a sudden it took off outside of, beyond the North Shore, beyond Chicago, beyond the suburbs, beyond Illinois. And now we're in, I think we're in 29 states and we're in 15 countries.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah. And I think what has made it so successful was the model that Susie set from the get-go is that mm-hmm. kids need these resources, these tools in their own community. Sure. If you live in the Southwest suburbs, you can bring your kids to downtown Chicago and they can meet in their group or they can go for their individual counseling. But ultimately you're taking them back to their neighborhood, to their community where they don't necessarily have those supports. So by offering groups from a credible messenger in their own community that they mm-hmm. already know, a teacher, a social worker, a librarian, a youth minister. It's somebody they already know and trust. It's somebody who looks like me, talks like me, understands what I go to at the go home to at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It works really, really well. And then, you know, as I mentioned in my other illustration, they start to identify peers in their own community that are going through similar things. So now all of a sudden, the two things that kids say most often are, Rainbows taught me that what happened wasn't my fault, because they always mm-hmm. think that it is. Yeah. And then, and that I'm not the only one. And the I'm not the only one piece is so powerful.
Oh, absolutely.
And none of us want to feel like we're walking this journey alone.
No. And we don't, you know, I think it's hard sometimes to find those people or that support that may be there. And I tell clients this all the time too. It's like, you know, talk to people. We tend to keep so much inside, but it's like, you know, talking about our situation and having that support and realizing, like, you know, other people have gotten through this. Mm-hmm. I can get through this too.
Right.
So I think that's such an important factor to yeah. realize that you're
and
not
when
alone.
You know, when you're in class all of a sudden and you're, you know, tonight is your science fair, your chorus concert, mm-hmm. and your person isn't going to be there.
Right.
You know, that all of a sudden that gets overwhelming in odd times and odd ways.
Oh,
and
yeah. So when you least expect it.
To be walking down the hall at school and be like, oh, there's Jen. Jen knows what I'm talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can kind of do your own kind of little group right there. In right. the hallway and get support.
Well, I think that's super important that you guys really pay attention to that and make sure that it's within the kids' community, because yeah, like you said, you can go the distance, even if it's like 20, 30 minutes away, and, you know, create a support system there. But a lot of these kids probably don't have, you know, the flexibility to get, you know, a ride to those places or just to be able, you know, the transportation itself, depending on what the home situation
right. is. And so many of our homes now are, you know, two person incomes, right? Mm-hmm. So if you suddenly take one out, whatever the right. cause is, now all of a sudden, maybe the surviving caregiver has to go back to work or back mm-hmm. to school, or now they're working two jobs instead of one. And getting a child, you know, somewhere else, whether it's 5 blocks away or 5 miles away or 25 miles away.
It's difficult.
It's the time. Mm-hmm. Pressure's hard. The financial pressure is hard. And that was one of the reasons that we said our groups would always be free to the kids who need them. Because yeah. you can't, the more barriers there are to support, the fewer kids are going to access it.
Right.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense to throw them up from the get-go. Let's try to eliminate as many barriers as we can.
So how do you select, how can you become a location that a partner to hold this program?
One scenario that happens occasionally, we had a situation last summer, actually. Two little girls were walking home from the park. I want to say they were like 5 and 8. Mm-hmm. They had walked over to the park. They'd taken off their shoes, played at the park, and then they were walking home and got home. And mom's like, where are your shoes? Like, oh, we got to go back and get our shoes. Well, on the way back to the park to get their shoes, they were hit by a car. One little girl was pretty severely injured, and the other one was killed. The little one was killed. So it's the middle of the summer, and one of the other parents in the community who mm-hmm. had children these girls' ages reached out and said, you know, can you tell me where the closest group is? And we have a find a group feature on our site mm-hmm. where you plug in your zip code, and if closest there's an location. Active site, it'll mm-hmm. pop up. And I always tell people, I'm like, but if one doesn't pop up, don't let that slow you down. Call the office, let us connect you. Because it, like in this situation, they didn't have a local group. So our program director, Laura Lindroth, got on the phone and located a church who was willing to host the group. Mm-hmm. And then it was, okay, is there anybody, do you have a youth ministry worker? Is there a social worker in your parish that would be willing to do this? So typically we get the application from the site. And we make sure that everybody is on the same page, that the person who is ultimately responsible for the building itself mm-hmm. knows this is happening.
Right.
And then we identify somebody to lead the group. And then typically in a school setting, you have to have a background check. So a teacher, a social worker, any kind of a support staff person would have a background check. Mm-hmm. Somebody doesn't have a background check that we can get a copy of, then we ask them to take an additional background check. And
okay.
it's like $25. It's yeah. super easy. but we want to make sure that whoever's providing support, you know, is safe to do that.
That's priority number one.
Yes. And then, so then we train them, and the training takes about 8 hours in the state of Illinois. We're licensed to offer 8 continuing education hours for social workers and educators.
Okay. Excellent.
And so we train the person on site. Mm-hmm. Typically one person will lead a group, you know, for up to 10 kids. Bigger than that, it doesn't work. There's too many kids to share what they need to share.
Right, right. Small groups are probably best.
And our groups are also age specific, because when you think about emotions, right, you're mm-hmm. a different person emotionally at 38 than you were at 28. And the same is true for our kids, but in a much tighter time frame.
For sure.
You know, where I'm at 3 is very different from where I'm at 5, mm-hmm. where I'm at 8, where I'm at 12. So our groups are targeted. So we typically will have our Sunbeams group, which is like pre-K and kindergarten. Mm. And then we have, I know the littles.
Sunbeams.
I know.
I love that.
And then we have Rainbows 1-4. So it's like, you know, first and second grade, third and fourth, fifth mm-hmm. and sixth, seventh and eighth.
Okay.
And then we roll into our Kaleidoscope, which is our high school program.
Okay. So it goes up to pretty much 18?
It does.
Okay.
And one of the things that we've actually talked about is there's so much trauma, honestly, that our kids have gone through, and then we send them off to college, and we trust that our colleges and universities have these wonderful mental health supports in place. And I can tell you from the interns that we get at, you know, several of our local universities mm-hmm. that that's not so. There are waiting lists, and then there's the whole stigma of, oh my gosh, I was seen going into the mental health center. And
right.
so that's actually our next area for growth, is going to be the college level.
I was going to say, I mean, gosh, like up to like, you know, 22, at least, like that would be a...
Brain research too shows that adolescence now extends to like 25.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to build in some supports for those kids too, I think is really important. But, so if we have a site, we could have up to, you know, 8 facilitators or 7 facilitators,
wow,
you know,
yeah.
if there's one for each age group.
Right.
So it can be... It's always better when the site is fully engaged and like, yep, we want to do this. We're doing it. We're moving forward. A lot of our sites take place in schools mm-hmm. because kids are already there.
Just makes it so much more convenient.
Exactly. Then the caregiver's not racing around trying to get them there before or after school.
Right.
And the thing, it's always fascinating to me that 70% of teachers have identified having at least one child in their classroom that's grieving a loss, mm-hmm. and less than 7% of them have had any training or support themselves in being able to help and being able to support the student.
Mm-hmm.
So as many times as we can get into schools, that's where we love to be. The downside to being in a school is typically those groups are only offered to the children of that school. So,
okay.
you know, like outside, in our community, we have
community.
9 schools,
right.
you know, so,
right.
but, you know, one child might not go to the same elementary school as another. So it always works best when we can really blanket a community.
Right.
So we're kind of starting in our Chicagoland area and mm-hmm. then just pushing out to see how far we can make the rainbow ripple.
Exactly. Oh, I love that, the rainbow ripple. But that's, so, you know, obviously you have, the person that's leading it has to be a social worker or...
Actually, they don't.
Okay.
A lot of our facilitators are social workers, retired social workers, mm-hmm. Educators. The problem with that is when you're a helping personality or a helping profession, when things go sideways, you're the first person that the entire community looks to make it better, to fix it. So
right.
those people are overloaded all the time.
I can imagine.
So there are situations where, you know, maybe it is a mom who, you know, before she, you know, decided to stay home with her kids was a social worker, and now she's part of the PTO and she is committed to doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But the program is designed so that anybody can offer it once they've been through the training.
Okay.
There are workbooks that there's a whole huge, like, ream to ream manual mm-hmm. for facilitators that thankfully is online now and not printed anymore.
Wow. Oh my
gosh.
So
we're saving thousands of trees.
I can imagine. Oh boy.
Yeah. But all the activities and everything are built right in there mm-hmm. so that, you know, facilitators, it's really a turnkey program.
Okay.
So.
Wow. So anyway, of course, you know, like I'm like, how can
I see the wheels turning, Jen.
You see the wheels turning. I know. Jen needs to do one more thing.
Right.
But yeah. I mean, how, you know,
I know.
I'm like, I love, you know, I love working with adults. And, you know, there's a lot of that. Like, I always say I feel like I do some like spiritual therapy, especially in Reiki sessions and just talk therapy and goal setting and all of that. And, you know, I mean, I love kids. And I think just that's such a need, you know, to have, to be able to connect with people on that different level and have adults that you can turn to that, you know, that it's a safe environment and you can express your emotions and people that understand how important it is to talk and emotions and all of that.
Right.
You know, so.
And but that's, you kind of touched on something that's always a little bit of a, maybe a hot button for me, just because my own personal experience of being a child of divorced parents. Mm-hmm. I always giggle when people say, oh, our divorce is totally amicable. And I'm always like, why are you getting divorced?
Right. Well,
it's my own baggage because my parents did not have an amicable divorce in any sense. Mm-hmm. And I think back to, you know, if I had been able to talk to my parents about what I was feeling about the other parent or the whole situation, mm-hmm. how different that would have been. But then I look at it too, and there are amicable divorces, and there are divorces. One of my very dear friends went through a divorce with her husband. They actually lived together for a year or so after their divorce because it was what was better for the kids.
Right.
And I admire people who can do that. But not everybody can. And even the ones who can do it, there are still things that bubble up for our kids that they don't want to talk to us about. Mm-hmm. One situation, this little boy was, you know, doing fine in school. He was in fourth grade, fine in school, participating, all the things they're supposed to be doing. The teachers had all been informed that his parents were going to be divorced. Dad moved out. Kids stayed in the home with mom. Mm-hmm. Visitation was worked out. Everything was fine, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, after dad moved out, after the first visitation, he stopped participating in class. The teacher caught him daydreaming like constantly. Mm-hmm. His grades started to slip. And it was such a quick change that the teacher became alarmed. So she reached out to the mom and she's like, I know the divorce is final. Is everything okay? He really seems to be struggling. So then they started to dig in. Mm-hmm. Well, after visitation, he went to his dad's apartment. His dad's apartment looks nothing like the house that they shared. His dad has almost no furniture, a very empty refrigerator because he worked, he traveled. There was not a lot of reason, a lot of stuff
was
in the fridge.
A cozy environment, necessarily.
You know, sleeping on a box spring and mattress on the floor until he decides what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. No cleaning supplies.
So
the little boy was like, can we please just have daddy come home? I know you're divorced. I know you don't want to be married anymore. It's okay. But can he please come home? Because I don't think he knows how to take care of himself. And that is what he was worrying about during class time and every other minute of every day. But
oh,
he wasn't
my gosh.
With him because he didn't think his dad could take care of himself.
And look at that. I mean, I feel like kids can just, they are so in tune to things. And I mean, the stuff that goes on in their mind, but it's like, yeah, that worry at such a young age. And it's like being, you know, I think we do. Being honest with kids, you know, I mean, when I went through my divorce, Michael and I didn't have kids, but I know several people who have gone through it. And, you know, there's that, there's the token of we should stay together in a toxic relationship just for the kids, which it's like, well, that's not, you know, the kids are aware.
My parents were working on that for a couple of years before they decided.
You know, it's like they know this is not a healthy environment for our children or ourselves. So we have to go through the process of divorce. But that's going to create a lot of change. And even though you may get along better and it's a healthier environment and relationship when you are divorced, there still are changes and it's not that same, you
and
know.
Change is scary.
Change is scary.
I know very few adults who embrace change. I'm always in awe of those people. I am not one.
I mean, change is hard, but I try and be one of those people who are positive about it because I think a lot of exciting things can come from it.
100%. And the further, you know, the further you get into life, I think the more you can embrace that and realize that. But I think the younger you are, the scarier it is.
Yes.
And when you think of how little they are, and I don't care if we're talking about a 15-year-old, how little control they really have over their environment to begin with.
Right.
And then all these things are happening that they have zero control over and they need a place to go. They need somebody to say, you know what? I'm really struggling because, you know, my person had been sick for 5 years and then they died. And now I'm happy because I get to go to Great America. I've never been able to go to Great America because my other caregiver had to take care of my person. And so he couldn't go.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I don't have to tiptoe around my house anymore. You know, and they feel bad about that. You know, they feel bad about laughing after, you know, in the aftermath of losing a person, you're person has gone to jail, is it appropriate to make a joke at home and laugh and cause uproar and chaos? Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're 8, you're 10, you're 15, right. You're 16.
I mean, it's okay. And I even telling adults, like, you know, it's important to feel your feels. Mm-hmm. And for kids too, it's like, you know, they are still kids and need to have some kind of normal life in that capacity, and know that it's okay to enjoy.
And humor and laughter are healing too. I mean, I think about every person that I have lost and sitting, you know, at home in the immediate aftermath of the wake or the funeral or at the wake, and people telling stories and you laugh, and those are the things that get you through.
Yes.
And so it's totally acknowledging what you're feeling and being able to embrace it as totally normal and natural and right. And that's what you feel, and it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, laughter is some of the best medicine, but I think it's just remembering those memories and, you know, laughing about it, and then you may cry about it, you know, whatever it is, but it's having that release is so important. So important.
Yeah.
So when you guys have, so basically, well, so the moral of the story is we might have to talk about that if I get some extra time. What other tools do you offer besides, and how does the format kind of work?
Yeah. So our groups meet for one hour to 1.5 hours. Our little sunbeams only meet for half an hour, because expecting a 4-year-old to spend more than 30 minutes digging into.
For sure. For sure.
Not going to happen.
Yes. A nice short check in.
Right.
That's good.
But it's an hour to an hour and a half, depending on, you know, what time is available to the facilitator. And then, they spend time. There are 12 actual units in our curriculum.
Okay.
And it's the same. The Sunbeam's second week is the same as Rainbow's 4-second week. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about the same thing. So if you're a caregiver and you have kids who are in separate groups because of their ages, when they get in the car at the end of the session or at the end of their group, they're talking about the same things. They're talking about fears and worries. They're talking about family changes. They're talking about, you know, using what tools they have to deal with their scary moments.
Right.
And then week 7 and week 14 can be added in or taken out depending on how much time the facilitator has.
Okay.
But they're called Celebrate Me Days. And what they really are is a celebration of the child, that the hard work that they're doing. And it is hard work. You know, we can do it with pictures and coloring and games and stories, but it's still hard work to confront some of those scary thoughts. Mm-hmm. So they have their Celebrate Me Day. They do, you know, they'll build in some games, and they'll do, you know, special projects together. Their family can be invited to celebrate them as well. And I just think wouldn't it be awesome if we just had a Celebrate Me Day?
Yes.
We'll just designate today our Celebrate Me Day, Jen.
I love it.
So, and then
you have to celebrate all your hard work and how you've moved forward in the process and the journey. Like,
exactly.
You have to take those moments. It's so important.
And we do ask the teachers or the facilitators, the kids and the parents to do pre and post assessments for each group. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that kids are better able to identify at the end of a group, yes, there is someone in my world who loves me. There's somebody in my world I feel safe talking to. And those are great things.
Yeah.
Because not all of us have those. So being able to do that is wonderful. And then we have kids who go through one group, you know, in second grade, and we may not ever see them again. They may not revisit a group. They might not need to. Mm-hmm. But then we have kids who go through the first semester group, the second semester group of first grade. They'll go the first semester group of second grade. Then they'll come back in fourth grade and do first and second semester because, you know, they just need that little boost. So our webpage, we have a resources page, and there's all kinds of information on there for parents, caregivers who are trying to, you know, teachers who are trying to support these kids. Mm-hmm. And then we debuted last year the Rainbows for All Children app.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw all the tools on the site. That was amazing. And it covers pretty much any life change or crisis you can think of. But the app,
app is super
amazing.
Cool. It's free. Kids can download it through iTunes or
Google Play or any podcast player.
I only have Apple, so all the other ones are a mystery to me.
As I always talk about, like, download the podcast app. I mean, I have an iPhone, but it's like anywhere podcasts are available.
But the app is on there, and you know, it says right on there that this is not a replacement for therapy or support. Mm-hmm. And, but there's, when the kids log in, they don't log in, actually, they open it up and it'll ask a couple of questions like, are you currently in a group? You know, because it helps us to know who is accessing it. And that way we can set up the content a little more focused and targeted to what those could
absolutely
be. And then there's a secure journaling space in there, which they do have to log into if they want to do that.
Okay.
So, and
oh,
I always tell
that.
I tell everybody, I'm like, it's like my diary under my bed, except my sister can't open it with a bobby pin or a paper clip.
There's a lot of, I have clients do that actually. There's a journal site. I mean, there are, and and sometimes, depending on what you're going through, you can't have those feelings or emotions available for others to find or go through, and it's, you need them kind of
secure. Conversely, there is a space, you know, when you've been journaling, if you go back, you know, if the kids go back to their group and they talk to their facilitator, I was thinking about this. Well, if you want to share it, you can forward it to your facilitator.
Okay.
And then there's also a place on there, called Mood Boosters. So you go in and you can put in, it'll ask you your age. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, 15. And then there are radio buttons for how you're feeling, anger, frustration, sadness, hostility. I mean, there's just like a whole litany of things to choose from.
Right.
So you hit that radio button and then an activity will pop up.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a journaling activity. It might be a yoga pose.
Okay.
It might be a coloring activity, depending on the age, or drawing activity. But it's something that kids can do in that moment, in that space. And, you know, the kids, there are two kids that I think of using our app regularly. It's the kids who've been in group, right? They were in group from 1 to 2 on Tuesday. Tuesday after school, they go play basketball, go home and have dinner, finish their homework, take their shower, get in bed. And now all of a sudden it's 10:30 and they're laying there and all that stuff is still rolling around.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's an easy thing to, you know, flip
open
up the app. And then the other child I think of is the kid for whom there, you know, isn't a Rainbows group in their school or their church or their synagogue or their library, and how helpful that can be. So I love that it's like literally in their hands. It's my favorite.
I mean, that's something that's a tool. I mean, that's just such an amazing tool. And the fact that you guys have, you know, options for them of how to kind of deal with that grief in that moment, whatever emotion or feeling they're going through. I mean, that's huge. And especially, for those kids that can't get to a group or don't have a facility like that, I think that's great to spread that awareness. Like, we have this tool for you no matter what, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So if they, so basically the program is so many weeks long and it's once a week, right? If they do want, do they have to cycle if they want to continue? Is there kind of like a maintenance way, or they just kind of go through the whole program again, like the curriculum?
Go through the whole curriculum again.
Okay.
And you know, and it's pretty evenly split. The kids who are one time, and then the kids who continue to come back. It's, you know, I always think of it, you know, we grieve developmentally, right? Like if, you know, if I lost my mom at, you know, 20, right? Now I'm graduating from college. I miss her. I wish she was here. Now I'm getting married. You know, she's not there. Right. Now I'm having children of my own and she's not there. And then they start to hit milestones and you're like, oh my gosh. And how you feel about that differs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And kids are not any different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when they start to process, you know, when they're little, when they're tiny, they're just, you know, their emotions are pretty simple. They can't even put their emotions into words sometimes. That's a lot of what the Sunbeams program is about, is helping them to identify what those feelings are.
Right.
They know sad, they know happy, they know mad.
Yeah. And that's about it. I mean, they can't really fully express, but knowing that someone is there to, they have the feeling of like when they can go to somebody and they have that love and support, they feel safe. And, you know, I think that's probably what a lot of it is about.
Exactly.
At that age.
Giving them a safe space to dump their bucket.
Yeah. What events do you guys have coming up, and what do you do to help fundraise to kind of, you know, keep the mission going?
Favorite subject,
I mean, that's
because we don't charge families. You know, that, like I said, that was the root of this
whole organization.
We want
to keep it free. That's
amazing. And so it typically costs us between $500 and $750 to train a facilitator. So we typically ask them to pay a portion of it, because we have found over 36 years now that when people have that kind of, you know, personal investment, they mm-hmm. take it a lot more seriously. When we trained anybody Absolutely. And everybody at no cost, mm-hmm. A group might or might not get started, and that's not helpful. So we always tell people, if you really want to start a group in your school or your library, please don't let that be a deterrent. Please mm-hmm. call. Let's talk about that. What can we do? For schools that are, you know, they've got, you know, 25% of their kids are getting free or reduced lunch, then we typically will reduce the fee by that much.
Okay.
And like I said, for social workers and educators, they can, in Illinois, they can get continuing education units. So right. at $20 an hour, like wonderful. You can't get
yeah.
you know, a CPTU for $20 no. an hour. So that works out really well for them. But aside from that, what we do is a lot of fundraising. It's grants to foundations and corporations. Mm-hmm. It's individual support. Over 36 years, we have an incredible base of support. You know, families whose kids have been through the program, people who yeah. knew Susie because Susie was such a dynamo. Mm-hmm. I met her for once, and we were together for about 2 hours, and she was just a teeny tiny, you know, compared to me. I mean, I'm 5'9", so everybody's teeny tiny to me, right? She's just a little bit of a thing, and just her yeah. energy and her passion for this work were so incredible. And so I'm always glad to have had that opportunity, so I can really understand the drive and the, you know,
absolutely.
The
you want to connect
had.
And relate to that person, and exactly. you're helping like spread this, you know, mission right. and, you know, her vision basically. Yeah. So being able to connect and know kind of where the person was coming from yeah. is
and so a lot of
huge.
People who still support us today, you know, supported us 35 years ago, mm-hmm. and that's awesome. Those are, you know, the real, the passion folks. And then, you know, and then we annually, we bring on new donors all the time who, you know, are becoming more and more passionate because they see the results of the program and,
right.
and the benefits to our kids. So in October 26th, actually, we have our umbrella brunch at the Chicago Yacht Club at Monroe Harbor. Mm-hmm. And it's, we came up with the idea of the umbrella brunch because in my mind's eye, you know, I use the phrase a lot, we're all just walking each other home. Mm-hmm. And in my mind's eye, I just see a facilitator and a child under a rainbow umbrella, and we're just walking and sloshing through the mud puddles, right? And trying to figure it out. So I loved the idea of the umbrella brunch. So we have it at the Chicago Yacht Club. It starts at 11. It ends at 2. It's an easy, you know, midday Saturday in and out.
Definitely.
One of our former alums is coming back, and she's going to share her story of Rainbow. She came to Rainbow's the first time when her brother died at, I think, 17, and she was like 6.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, her story is pretty powerful and pretty compelling. And mm-hmm. she talks about her parents took her to therapy because they knew, you know, that this was beyond the norm. And she said it just didn't feel normal to sit, or natural to sit across from an adult and try to, you know, that she didn't know and didn't necessarily trust and dump her feelings
yeah.
out. But she said it definitely felt more normal to come to a group and sit across from her friends and talk about whatever while they were coloring or while they were playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so she's amazing. So she'll be there. And we're also honoring Seyfarth Shaw, a law firm that we work with here, but they have offices everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been amazing in supporting us and, you know, making sure that we're doing everything we're supposed to do, dotting our I's, crossing our T's, making sure that we're you know, behaving appropriately right. in the world, making
awesome.
Good choices,
making good choices to keep on going.
Yeah, but they've been awesome. So we're honoring them for their past support. So that's exciting.
And that's awesome.
We have this incredible board of directors and an mm-hmm. advisory board that, you know, always and forever are like, Steph, I need you to talk to this person. I need you to tell them the Rainbow story. And then one of our advisory board members is actually Susie's son, Mike. So it's great to have Mike and his family still connected to Rainbow. After all these years.
That's amazing.
And, you know, so we just, I mean, they're all really incredible, committed individuals mm-hmm. who are connected to this work for one reason or another. Some of them have experienced loss, some have not, mm-hmm. but they all understand.
But they can get behind it,
yeah.
the mission, and want to help other people
yeah.
and see how, you know, it impacts these kids' lives.
Yeah.
And I definitely, you know, I talk about it, and I've had a therapist on the podcast too, a few actually, and it's great to be able to have that as a resource. But you're right, sometimes there's something about that group of peers that are going through the similar situations where you don't feel like you have to just sit there and talk for an hour, but you can enjoy time together. And if the conversation comes up, it comes up. But yep. knowing that, you know, it's just, I think it feels a little bit more authentic sometimes to just have that group of people or friends that you can, you know, color with or go hang out with, but also open up and talk about your feelings because you know that person's going through something that's a similar situation.
That's funny. You said something and I had a mom ask me one time, she said, I'm not sure that a group is right for my son. He's mm-hmm. in high school and had lost his dad and she was going through some health stuff. And she said, I'm not sure a group is right. He doesn't really talk about it. He doesn't really want to talk about it. And I love that kids can go and sit and they don't necessarily have to talk, to your point. Mm-hmm. They can sit and listen to everybody right. else and the takeaways are still really important and powerful.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Sometimes just sitting there and listening, like that's all you need, you know, and eventually maybe you'll feel comfortable to open up and talk yep. about it. But I think it's just kind of calming and comforting to know that other people, to hear other people's stories. I think it just kind of hits you kind of in your core a little bit and you're like, huh, okay, this person's going through this or something that they maybe do that's helpful for them to get through it. Like you can take that into your mind and into consideration.
And it becomes part of your toolbox, right?
Absolutely. So what do you think, what suggestions do you have for parents or signs for maybe the adult caregivers for children when you think it's appropriate that they should contact Rainbows or have them kind of come into a group?
Yeah. So a lot of times we'll get a call, you know, my husband, our divorce was finalized on Monday. I need to get my kids in a group right away. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, okay. All right. Let's talk about that. But a lot of times it takes the kids a little while. They need a little space to process, you know, what they've seen and heard and what their experience has been. Mm-hmm. I always would encourage a family to try a group. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even before an individual counselor for the reason that our alum mentioned that it just doesn't necessarily feel natural.
Right.
Our facilitators are great at being able to identify if a child isn't necessarily ready or if there are deeper issues. And sometimes mm-hmm. there are. I mean, I got a call this past spring from a local school social worker and she's like, I just want you to know I'm sitting here with mom. We were on speakerphone. Her husband died in the fall. Their second grade daughter now is talking about wanting to take her own life so she can go to heaven and be with her dad. So where's a group? Okay, wait, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
I think first of all, she really does need to be evaluated by an independent licensed mm-hmm. counselor.
Yes.
Because, you know, God forbid, you know, kids are very, very literal and they mm-hmm. don't understand that that means forever. That doesn't mean I'm going to go hang with my dad and then come back and see my mom again.
Right, right.
You know, there are times where one works better than the other and there are times where they can work really well in tandem. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, watch out for changes in your child's mood or their behavior. If your child seems to be lashing out at you, it's a sign. They mm-hmm. want to talk to somebody and, you know, and it's not anything against you. It's just there are things they don't want to share with you necessarily. You know,
right.
they don't want to tell you secretly down in my heart, I think I love my dad more, you know?
Yes.
They don't want to hurt your feelings. Kids are really empathetic and they want, you know, that's their biggest fear is hurting your feelings or making you feel sad or bad. Mm-hmm. And then when they start lashing out, that's the last thing they want to be doing. So if they're lashing out, if their eating patterns change, mm-hmm. if they used to hang out with their friends all the time, they don't want to anymore. You know, if they're spending a lot of time in their room alone, that's a really big red flag. Mm-hmm. Too much thought is not necessarily a good thing.
Yes.
Especially
absolutely.
When it's all by yourself.
Yep.
I just had this conversation with somebody last night. Mm-hmm. You know, as a parent, being able to recognize a little bit of alone time is totally appropriate and right. But there is a time where you have to reel them back in and say, okay, now you're back in our family unit and this is what we're going to do. We're going to watch a movie. We're going to have popcorn. We're going to have dinner. We're going to whatever. Mm-hmm. But anything, you know, and just because you see those changes doesn't mean that you're headed down this terrible road and it's never going to be, you know.
Absolutely.
If you identify that there's something cooking, talk to your child. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, do you think you might want to do this? There's a group that meets and, you know.
Just opening up that conversation.
Yeah.
And knowing that there's options there.
Right. Exactly. Tools. There's lots and lots. And that's one thing I think that as a global community, we're getting better about is recognizing that what trauma, long-term unaddressed trauma does to our kids.
Yes, absolutely.
And giving them places to go and tools to cope.
And I think it's got to be hard too, just even in that, the teenage years going through a loss, or a crisis of any kind. You're also a teenager.
Yep. So you don't get to hit the pause button on that.
There's part of like, I mean, there's some, I want to say, normal behavior that can happen as to going along as a teenager and hormones and all the different things that happen that we can't control. But on top of that, you know, so that's probably just a great, you know, resource and support and conversation to have if you think see things kind of going to the extreme a little bit or something.
And
you
I think
question.
You know, to your earlier point about being honest with our kids, you know, if you're feeling frustrated and angry yourself, letting your kids see that you're frustrated and angry, you know, not at them but the situation or the emotions that you have, or you know, let them know that we have these and it's okay.
That's a huge point. I think so many times we try and like mask that, and want to be strong, you know, for the people in our lives or children or, you know, whoever it may be. And of course, you don't want to, there's a difference of having like arguments in front of the kids or things that, you know, might be toxic, but to let them know like how you're feeling, kind of an inside of like, you know, I know this is a really hard situation right now. I'm struggling through this and, you know, it's hard for me. I'm having emotions of sadness and anger, whatever it might be, but talking to your kids and being honest with them and allowing them to see what you're going through,
and,
I think, and that you're helpful
and this is, you know, this is how I cope. And, you know, our kids are going through so much. I mean, I look at, you know, the issues around deportation now, the number of kids who, you know, whose family members been deployed. You know, there's just a lot of things that are pulling kids, you know, out of their family unit. Yeah. And I think if we're not really careful, I think in a decade, we're going to be really sorry.
Yeah. Wow. There's so many things that you don't even think of that are issues that are happening that kids would need to, that they could go to Rainbows for. Like, I mean, what are some of the most popular that you see right now? I don't even like using the word popular,
but the most common are typically separation and divorce, and death. And those are, you know, it seems like with separation and divorce, it's kind of one of those things. Well, you know, we're handling it at home. We're okay. You know, they don't need a group. And then there's that little piece of you that doesn't necessarily want your family's dirty laundry maybe shared in a group setting. And kids, like I said, kids are super literal and they say some of the funniest things. I think of, Tom's cousin who lives in Scotland. He was doing some work at their local jail. And his daughters were little. And they went, you know, they're at school, and his oldest daughter is like, my dad's in jail. And so her mom goes to pick her up at school, and he's just like, I'm so sorry to hear what's happening in your family. And,
oh my gosh.
And she's like, what's happening in my family?
She's like, wait a minute. What
well,
don't I know?
I just heard that your husband's in jail. And she's like, he's working there. He's working there for like a week. Okay.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
I mean, our kids are really little. Right. And so, you know, there's a little piece of you. One of my kids' first grade teachers said at open house one year, he said, I will believe half of what they, if you only believe half of what they tell you about me, I will only believe half of what they tell me about you.
Oh,
and as
my
a parent,
gosh.
I was
like,
oh no.
That's, I mean, I'm sure they do. They just say whatever. I mean,
they do. They're very, you know,
that's the innocence and the wonderful thing about kids. But I could see people, you know, parents kind of being like, well, you know, we want to keep it kind of private. We don't, you know, want to share.
And so, you know, and I just think, you know, I really cannot think of one divorce situation that doesn't look very like another one. You know, there's always, divorces are a little like snowflakes, but they do have some same general kind of characteristics, and the impact on families are very similar too. I think you just have to, you know, put your child's welfare above your own fear,
right?
And recognize that, you know, those supports are really important, and trust that if, if suddenly, you know, they, that something untoward comes out, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Exactly. You know what? It's, you deal with it then, and it's, you know, it's usually not a big deal in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
And getting that support for your child is the priority.
Yep.
And most
100%.
Important. So how did you, real quick, I'm like, before we wrap this up, how did you start working for Rainbows? Because you've had a background in the not-for-profit world.
So I started actually at an all-girls Catholic school, and I was there for 13 years. And I originally went in, I was doing marketing and communications, you know, writing press releases, working with the Moms Club to get the word out about their special events. And we'd been through a couple of development directors and the president at the time. I was getting ready to go on maternity leave with my second child. And it was literally the day before. And she said, listen, when you come back, you're going to be the development director. Okay. I was like, okay.
Like, wow. Great. Okay. Great.
She said, you've been doing the work anyway. You know what you're doing. It's fine. Yeah. And I'm really glad to have had that experience because I think working in an alumni based institution, you do learn that everybody that gives you a dollar trusts you. They are trusting you to do something important with that. Right. And it's very relationship based. Mm-hmm. So I was really glad to have that foundation. And then I'd been there 13 years and one of my sister's twins was diagnosed with a terminal illness. And the doctor said, you know, you've got 3 months and it's a very rare genetic disease. And then it became this thing of, oh my God, does the other twin have the same genetic makeup? Like what's happening? And so everybody, our entire family had to be tested to see who was carrying the gene, if there were any, you know, any carriers, anybody who was going to develop the disease. My sister had been through a really rotten divorce before that. You know, we lived through our parents' divorce. So, I started, you know, watching my sister kind of work through that with her kids made me really aware that, you know, and trying to find support for them at the time. And this was 2004.
Okay.
And even in 2004, it was really hard.
It was hard
to find.
Yeah.
You know, one was three, the other one was, you know, eight. Mm-hmm. And trying to find support for them was really difficult. So then I switched to a small nonprofit, that offered groups once a month for families. In and around the North Shore. And I was there for 3.5 years. And that's really where I learned about grief and the long-term impacts and the daily impacts. And then I had an opportunity to switch to a rape crisis center, which I was really glad I did because I worked for this amazing woman who not only agreed with me that fundraising is relationship-based, but also I learned a lot from just in terms of leadership and, you know, working with donors and really giving them these mission moments that connect them with what you're doing and how important that is. So I was able to work with her for 4 years and it was such a blessing. And so when this opportunity popped up with Rainbows, I went to interview and one of the board members who interviewed me, I knew all of his sisters from this Catholic school.
Oh my gosh.
Had met his dad. And then I had met Susie and, you know, and one of the people interviewing me was Susie's son, Mike. and it just, it became this thing of, yep, this is
that right.
And I do believe personally, my own belief is that the universe puts you where you're supposed to be as much as I don't like change.
Yeah.
But I do believe that the universe puts you where you're supposed to be. And I absolutely felt like Rainbows was where I needed to be. I still need to be there. And I don't, you know, I'm not seeing any big billboards pointing me in another direction.
Yeah.
We're doing some great things. You know, we've just started, we received a grant from the Chicago Teachers Union Foundation to train 175 educators in the CPS school system.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah. So we're those groups will be starting this fall. And I'm really, really anxious to look at the all the assessments from that to see the changes because I know that our program makes positive change for these kids. So we've got that going. We're working with the Cook County Sheriff's Department. There are a handful of those sheriffs who are like, we want a different face in our community. We want to be able to offer groups.
Wow.
So we're training them. You know, the app, there's just all kinds of great things happening.
And that's incredible.
We're getting ready to launch into a series of books on different pillars of loss with our Family Wizard, which is an online tool for parents who are divorced, how they manage family schedules and other things.
Okay.
So we'll be working with them and Learner Publishing on a series of books about the pillars of loss and, you know, because there's not anything new and recent, you know, that kids can pick up, the littles up to, you know, teens about their personal situation. And there's books out there about everything, but that.
Well, and it's like, you guys are doing it, so you might as well write about it.
Right.
And have it as an extra resource.
Yeah. So there's lots of great things happening. And like I said, you know, without our our donors who are so very committed to what we do, our board members and our incredible staff. Mm-hmm. We're just really, and our facilitators are like the unsung heroes. In the last 18 months, with the work that our facilitators have donated to these kids, it's been like $2.3 million that we would have had to pay people to do this.
Gosh.
And with their volunteer efforts, that's how much of a difference they're making for the kids in their own communities.
That's such an impact. I want to thank you for just all you do and the role that you play in just changing people's lives, because just being there as that support, I mean, that's, you know, I want to be able to help others in life. And that's, you know, one of my missions. It's always been, and I love knowing people that share that same belief. And it's truly so important. And it's like you have no idea like the effect and the impact you have on others.
Nope.
So thank you for being you.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me space to talk about it. It's my favorite thing to talk about.
Absolutely. Of course.
But so if anybody wants to buy tickets for the Umbrella Brunch, you can go to rainbows.org and it'll be up there by the end of this week for registration. So
awesome. It'll be up by the time this podcast comes out too, because we're a few weeks ahead. So rainbows.org is the place that they can get everything.
Yep. That's resources, information, donations, all of that happens right there.
Okay. And are you on social media? Where can they follow?
We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram.
Look at that.
LinkedIn.
Awesome. Yeah. So everything.
Everything.
And that's everywhere. Just at Rainbows.
Rainbows for All Children.
Okay.
I think Twitter might be Rainbows for Kids or Rainbows for All Kids.
Okay. Awesome.
But everybody else is Rainbows for All Children. And if you go to Pinterest, there's all kinds of, it's everything from quick and easy weeknight meals to activities to do with your kids. And
Incredible.
Our resource page is really for caregivers very beneficial.
Yeah, I saw that and I'm like, there's so many tools on there. So that's pretty amazing. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you,
my dear. Talk about this very important topic. And to all you guys out there, any questions or topics or guests that you want to hear on my show, go ahead and send me a message at my Facebook page, Gen Z, or on Instagram at JZ Beauty and the Beast. And if you get Zen with Jen, you can send me a message wanting to get one of my new wristbands that I have with the hashtag I Get Zen with Jen and hashtag Embrace Amazing. I appreciate and love all your support, and I would love to send out a wristband to those of you who want and want to continue supporting and listen to the podcast and get Zen with me. And I love you all. So you can send me a message with your address and I will send you a wristband. But until next week, I will see you guys then. Thanks. Bye.